Willkommen, herzlich willkommen in unserer Sendung, Dr. Gero Neugebauer. Sie sind wissenschaftlicher Forscher, Politik-Soziolog an der Otto-Suhr-Institut von der Freien Universität Berlin. Ich stelle vor, dieses Interview in Englisch zu machen.
Okay.
Yeah. We phone you because of the collapse of the Berlin Wall, of course. You are a researcher about these matters.
I did. And,
yeah, you did. Especially about the party system within the Neue Bundesländer.
Yeah.
And especially the PDS and the Linkspartei, which is on the rise with the loss to Chancellor Wallen. Hmm?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, this is all about German unification and reunification. But the whole history of Germany since medieval times, it's about nation formation. So it took two wars and a long Cold War. How did that come? What is special about the German society?
One can start to ask if all people understand the events 20 years ago mm-hmm. as unification or as reunification. Mm-hmm. Some say it's a unification. Others say it's reunification. Reunification, this is said by all those who believe that there was only a time in German history that makes two mm-hmm. German states. Others say no, there were two states with own constitutions, political regimes, and both have said to be something somehow for eternity and now. Mm-hmm. That's a unification because the one wasn't able to survive. 40 years, more than 40 years, two different states means more than 40 years different societies. You can still notice today that there are different types of people and different kinds, for instance, how to spend leisure time, how to work, how to make political protest, and how to vote for political parties.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but the economical situation in 1989 of the German Democratic Republic, how it was exactly? Because they told me that the welfare state of the DDR was almost the same as the level of, say, Portugal, economically speaking.
I didn't spend my time in 1989 in Portugal, but if you look at the figures, you will find that the official figures said that the East Germany, the former German Democratic Republic, belonged to the was among the first 10 industrial nations in the world, mm-hmm. and it said it was a well-developed social system. People had no problems to get a job, to get educated, to get health care, but it was, however, on a very low level. If people become old, for instance, they were not protected enough against poorness. And the doctor said, we have a well-developed system of health care, but we don't have all possibilities mm-hmm. To cure patients. That's why we're allowed to go to West Berlin or to West Germany. But all over, if you look at the figures, it said the situation was good, but if you looked into the practice, how people lived, one could find that there were a lot of gaps and differences, and that was due to the bad economic situation in the country that lasted from the last 70s, the beginning of the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Was the leadership, the SED, aware of that problem, or did they deny it, living in denial?
They had something like public surveys. They had people who wrote letters to the head of the state and complained about different things, and they had the West German newspapers, a West German correspondence in the GDR, who reported to their newspapers, to their radio broadcasting stations, and they reported, of course, for the East Germans too. Those who wrote reports often said the Politburo, the head of the Socialist Unity Party, the SED, was not willingly to lead these reports. They were not willingly to lead, to read that the economic situation grew worse, that the state was unable to fulfill his promises to the people, to give them money enough, to give them consumer goods enough. You had to wait, for instance, for a car between 6 to 10 years, and people were often fed up with the situation. Often they compared with Sweden, for instance, or with Poland, and they said, okay, we are better than the people in Poland, but it's much worse than in Sweden. And they didn't ask for Sweden, they didn't ask so much for West Germany. They had the West Germans as visitors at home.
Now, the political aftermath, we have here a whole timetable and so on. I'm not going to get in the details. But what is the political consequence for this new Bundesländer, this new state? There was the PDS, for instance, a follower of the SED.
The one consequence is that, let me say another. 1989, the people in East Germany wanted for a change in the situation. As soon as they realized that there was no change, they said, okay, we are fed up with this regime, we are trying to make some political protest, and as soon as the wall was open, they said, we want to travel to West. They didn't go to the West. They still hoped that the East, situation in East Berlin and East Germany would improve soon. This didn't happen. The regime broke down, and they voted for a new regime in 1990. There was the first German elections, and the people in East Germany started for what the former Chancellor of West Germany, Helmut Kohl, has announced as flowering landscape. Situation would be better soon. They would could pay it with some money only, and so the people in the East started to wait for the fulfilling of the promises. But Fortuna didn't show up, and soon, that means about 3-4 years later, the people was disguised. They said, okay, we have waited so long, we see there's no improvement, we have a lot of unemployment. Unemployment rate was twice as high as in West Germany. We have a breakdown of industry and so forth.
I'm coming to that. Because there was, of course, the Treuhand. What kind of monster was that? It was headed by a Belgian guy, Mr. André Leysen.
Yeah, the monster was an institution that was established to sell East German economy, East German cultural scene, all what
they robbed the industry.
They sell it, most of it, to West German employers or investors, some to former employers or employees of the GDR. But in a lot of cases, it was broke down. It was still the end of a lot of industrial plans. And some, only very few could survive. The most of them broke down.
Even complete new Eisenhüttenstadt.
It's that's such an example, because an investor from Belgium came and bought it. And but they had to wait about 6 to 7 years until it started to work. And to compare the old with the new figure, in the late 80s, there were more than 12,000 people with jobs in this steelwork, and now they are less than 2,000. And in so far, even if there was a start and a successful start again, most of those who had jobs in these former places, they didn't have jobs any longer.
Has these political consequences also? I guess the PDS with the nostalgia for Aussies.
Yes, it had the one of the political consequences was that the people didn't trust very much in democracy. The other consequence was that they started to protest against West German kind of policy making in the East. They voted for the successor party of the former governing SED, for the PDS. And in so far, the PDS became a rather well-established party, sometimes in second, sometimes in third place, in the East German Länder, in the East German states. But the PDS, however, failed in trying to get a position in the national level. So strong in the East, weak in the West, and this could have become the fate of the party if she hadn't joined the small left party in the West that was formed by socialists, social democrats.
Alternative for social gerechtigkeit or something?
Yeah, alternative for social justice, for workplaces and social justice. Wahlalternative, soziale Gerechtigkeit.
Now, with the last elections, chancellorship, they did very well. I guess it was about a figure of 12%.
Yes, near 12%, 11.7%,
How can you explain that? Because of just the guy, what was his name, Oscar de la Fontaine?
Yeah, this is a part of the explanation. At first, about all the other parties have at least one-fifth of their voters live in the East, but half of the voters of the Linke live in the East German Länder. Second, the party got a lot of support from former Social Democrats, but even from some conservatives and liberals, but most of the support came from those who were former supporters of the Social Democratic Party. Oscar Lafontaine has been the head of the party until 1999, then he left the party, and he waited 6 years until he decided to join another party, the VASC, UFS decided before, and they tried to get back to the 70s. They say we can make a kind of a welfare state policy that accords to the frames of the 70s. That is, means national strong economy, no international impacts. That means globalization could be stopped at the border of Germany. That's the problem they have with Europe and the problem with the economy too.
Yes, but there was also Mr. Schröder and his reforms, say, Hartz IV. Hartz was a guy from Volkswagen.
Yeah.
What was that all about? It was about cutting wages down, cutting income, social welfare, and so on.
It was cutting down unemployment money. The Germans had two steps. The first grade was you got about, after you got unemployed, you got about 60 to 63% of your former income. For up to 3 years, and then you got for an undetermined time further 50%. Fear meant you got your unemployment money, but only in most cases only for 1 year, and then you got down to the so-called Hartz IV money. It could mean you had a job for 2,000 euros. Unemployment money first, it means 1,200 euros, and the unemployment money second grade was about 900 to 1,000 euros, and now you got only 345. And so far, a lot of people got down, and they said, this is a social disaster, and we don't want to get thrown back in our expenses. The second step was pension with 67, it was pension with 65 before, and they said, okay, people getting older, then we have less employment, and so these both reforms was a basic for the...
It's easy understandable that people turn away from the classical socialist party.
Yes, you know. This was the cause, because the left grew up and social democrats went down.
So now we have right-wing government, 20 years after Stress Gallup of Dutch. What have we to wait for a guy like Mr. Westerwelle, this liberal guy?
All parties had in their election program, apart from the East, Mr. Westerwelle had no part for the East. They said, we will develop, and if we can't develop, we want to support only private initiatives. The state shall withdraw from social tasks, from social development, and other things too, even in the education system. But Mr. Westerwelle had to realize that he couldn't fulfill his plans because the chancellor, Mrs. Merkel, has grown up in the East, and she doesn't want to get rid of all the East German electorate. And the East Germans say, okay, we trust in Mrs. Merkel, but in most cases they trust in themselves and then in the left.
Yes. On a broader international scale and even European scale, it is merkwürdig that after the unification, Germany was back in business in military operations.
Yeah.
Yes. Since the Second World War.
50 years ago, you can point out in German politics, you say, never, Germany will never be share in a war. And it was an understanding within the German population that they won't be a part of aggressive plans, or that security policies should be soon without military. But in 1999, the Red-Green coalition...
Yes, but Mr. Joschka Fischer.
Joschka Fischer, anti-militarist, yeah? Informal head of a pacifist party, said, okay, we will never have a situation like in the German war when the national ethic was destroyed by another, and so far they joined Kosovo. And this was the first step they made away from their former self-understanding as a party who will take care for peace in international relations. And the second step was that the Germans participated in Afghanistan.
Yes, Bundeswehr is in Afghanistan.
Yeah, Bundeswehr in Afghanistan. We saw the German freedom in the Hindukush Mountains. And what's true is that on the other side, Gerhard Schröder, who said we have to participate in the war in the Balkan area, didn't want that the Germans should go to Iraq, to Baghdad, and this was one of the reasons why he won the elections in 2002. Also, the situation was rather bad for him.
Mm-hmm. Now, back to the East German Bundesländer, what will be the perspective for the time to come, socially and economically?
Socially, if you go to the urban areas, you'll find old people and young men, but no young women. Most of the young and well-educated women leave for the West because there they find jobs, there they find vocational training places and so on. The population is shrinking, really. They had about more than 16 million in 1989, and they have now about 14 million and less. Second perspective will be that they have no enough well-skilled labor force. Mm-hmm. Some of the industries are looking for skilled labor, but they don't find them. Mm-hmm. Third is most of the people who go to the Bundeswehr, to the army, are from East Germany. Because the young men who are not so well educated say, oh, I look for my chance in the Bundeswehr. If I join the army, it will be better for me than to stay at home. Economically, you can say they have a very good developed logistic system, very good streets, and the telephone system is very well, better as in some parts of Germany. But on the other side, no increasing in jobs, no incentives in other things too.
What about the far right parties like the NPD? Extreme racist groups, say neo-Nazi, is there a danger also? Or is this marginal or just folklore?
One can say that in Saxony, the nationalist, the right extremist party, National Party of Germany, is rather strong. They have gained a second success in the Landtag, in the state parliament. In all the other states, they are rather weak. there is a development that the former right-wing parties, National Democrats, the Republicans, and the German People Union are getting weaker and weaker. But on the other side, there are some formations out of the party system, so-called Kameradschaften, mm-hmm. Blood and Honor, for instance, like this, and they are getting stronger. Mm-hmm. They are getting stronger, and they are more and more dominating the political scene at the right.
Are the Ossis, the Eastern Germans, German people, happy with capitalism as it really exists in reality?
It sets at about 5%. The East Germans, long back, they want the former GDR back. Mm. One can understand because there are some people who said we had never had a chance after 1989. And they are denying our efforts, what we have all reached in the other part. About 50% say, "No, we don't trust in democracy." But these are people who say the output is bad. They expect that the development of democracy and the development of welfare would happen at the same time as it happened in West Germany after 1949-1950. But they say, okay, no, we see it doesn't happen. If you ask one, are you happy to have another car, to can travel, you have a better paid job or a higher pension than you had in GDR times, they say yes. Others say no, because it's not so good for me. The situation is rather different. And as long as the left has about 50% of its voters in the East, one can say these 50% are more or less anti-capitalistic and not content with the result of capitalistic development in the East.
Well, you can speak all over Europe of a crisis of the classic social democratic parties. Huh?
Yes.
And the reasons for some say, yeah, they stayed too long with liberal policies, with neoliberal ultra-capitalist policies, instead of social welfare policies. Is that a little bit problem of the classical left?
The classical left has...
Say Anthony Giddens and so on.
Mm-hmm. They told... Schröder made his reforms, and the government told the people, we don't have any money to pay all those what we paid before. You can demand what we don't want to pay. We have to cut taxes because the world economy will not come to Germany. They will, and it's so far the idea of welfare state is still exists in the head of the people, but there's only one party who say, all the other parties are neoliberals that are left in the left, and the social democrats, the old socialists say, no, we are no neoliberals. We are doing those reforms only which are necessary to make Germany survive economically. And far, they don't agree about what's real necessary in this country and what's real necessary to integrate the East in the West. We have still a split society.
Yes. Globalization today, in The Guardian, I think, it was an article of Michael Gorbachev, and he said that there are boundaries to this ultra-capitalism, the international financial crisis, for instance. How does it affect German politics, this international crisis? Different than ours, like the Opel affair is here in Antwerp.
On the one side, our government said about 6 months ago, don't care, we get it, we can handle it. Soon they had to realize that they needed international support, and they had to make some joint efforts with other European states and governments. And in the country they said, okay, during the election campaign, the liberals and the conservatives say, we will cut taxes. If you vote for us, you soon will have lower taxes than now. But now, after the elections, and we have the new conservative liberal government, they say, "Oh, sorry, we have to be aware that there are a lot of problems. And if we would cut taxes, we had to increase other fees, for instance. So, or we will cut our supports for social tasks. For instance, they pay less for insurance of pensionists. They pay less for the rents of hard-sphere people. Then the cities and the communities would say, okay, and who's paying it? And then the government would say, oh, let the people pay. And so far, we have to realize that the financial crisis has a rather big impact on public money, on the spending of public money, and of those promises who say people pay less than before. About 90% of the Germans don't believe these promises, but they say, okay, don't care, I'm still alive.
Mm-hmm. The unification of Germany is now 20 years on. What is the impact on a European level? There's talking about the Franco-German alliance between Sarkozy and Angela Merkel. Yeah. There is still an Economist with a big article on it. How is now the position? How can you evaluate this unification in the European light?
At first, you have to realize that France allowed Germany this unification policy after the Germans agreed to introduce a euro earlier than it was expected before. And then the Germans had to realize that they didn't have much friends among the British. The British said, okay, no, we don't want a Fourth Reich. Maggie Thatcher was very strong with this argument. And then they said, after Schroeder, they said, okay, we have to, on one side, to find a new position against the United States, but not Europe. And now you are true. It seems to me that Merkel and Sarkozy are trying to form a German-France X with a third real Poland. So they can say, okay, on the one side, these are the three countries in the heart of Europe who have the biggest population. Poland is important as the country to Russia, but Germany and France say if there is a motor in the European development, it must be our two nations and our two governments. And so far, there's a kind of development of a core of Europe on the one side and surrounding nations on the other side. And if you have a Europe which is developing in two steps, or the one is going slower, the other is going faster, it wouldn't be very good for the development of Europe at all.
I don't have much further, but will there also military consequences, like a Euro Corps?
The left said we didn't want the Treaty of Lisbon. The Treaty of Lisbon has a danger. The danger is the militarization of Europe. Of course, the agreement of Schengen was the first step to form something like a Europe border police, a Eurocorp. And if you look to the south of Europe and if you find that the European police is trying to prevent people from Africa to get to Europe, then you see that under the surface there's much development has happened in the meantime. Cut off or cut back, I think. And so far, it would be better to control these policy even by the people, by elections and by governments, that there is nothing like a European military cooperation that tries to get as strong as the Russians or as strong as the United States. We have two states in Europe with nuclear power, France and England. We have one nation with a big territorial army, that's Germany. We have joint forces. We have a French-German brigade. We will have soon a Polish-German brigade. And in so far, the internationalization or the Europeanization of the military is going forward rather fast. And in so far, one had to look at it getting too fast and getting independent of other politics.
Politics more practical. What do you think about this protectionism around Opel? It was people were very upset here in Belgium about the Opel and also with the Volkswagen.
Okay, I think the people in Belgium are right if they get upset, because if motor company, our automotive company, is doing a bad job in a market economy, in capitalism, one have to say, sorry, you didn't develop right. It's not the fault of the government. It's not the mistake of the people because they didn't want to buy these Opel cars the German produced. And so far, goodbye from the market. We can buy Chinese, Japanese, Korean, or Germans, or English, or British, or whatever. But the German government started these...
For electoral reasons?
Yes, for electoral reasons. For electoral reasons. They said, okay, we have to do something like the protection of the German labor force and of German industry. But remember, 2 years ago, Sarkozy and Merkel agreed about so-called government funds. The state should buy shares of big industrial plants to protect them for takeover by Russians or Chinese. And now company that belongs, if you will, more or less to a Russian government. Huh?
It's a Russian bank.
It's a Russian bank, of course. But okay, a Russian bank, but they sell it to Russia. So that's what one calls very fast turns, and these fast turns are somehow surprisingly because if they say, they can't have, they will not have any influence of the decision of this Russian bank or the owners of the coming owners of Opel. And in so far, I think if the European Commission wouldn't have said, okay, try to find a solution, and in this solution, all the European nations, beside Belgium, Spain, and Poland, shall take part, so that you can find a European solution. I wouldn't have no doubts to agree, but as a national project, it's nonsense. Yeah. It may survive for 2 years, but now, later, you don't know.
But can this protectionism partially explained by that even trade unions with the Mitbestimmung system has a big influence in the as a stakeholder?
Yes and no. Mitbestimmung is one of those instruments which are used by the German government to solve crisis. On the other side, it doesn't help the unions to get more influence on political decision. The other way is that Mitbestimmung, as long as it's not a European workers' council from all the Opel plants, it's nonsense to say to the one we are stronger than you are, and I think it's a mistake. The metal union in other cases tried to form a European position in some affairs before they started strikes or other actions. The German workers or the German metal workers said, no, we will do it before, and then we'll ask our colleagues. And you have, remember one the year ago with the Swedish GM division Saab, it happened the same. Huh? Mm-hmm. Okay, Trollhättan may be closed, but Rüsselsheim, the work shall go on or so.
Okay.
It's not the problem. The problem is capitalism. they are going to earn money to make profit, and if they like to do, they use the unions and they use co-determination as a kind of a shield.
Okay. We have very bad phone contact now. If you can... Okay, you are back. Can you repeat your last sentence?
Please.
Hello.
Yes, I'm back.
Yes, you're back. You're back.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I didn't hear you.
Okay. Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Yes, can you repeat, please, your last sentence?
The problems are not the unions or the co-determination. The problem is capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
If the owners, if the shareholders wants to make more profit, they go to the places where they get the profit. And if they realize that it's bad for them or the conditions becoming worse in Germany or in other European states because the workers demand more money or more holidays or even more co-determination, they say, no, please, we'll leave. And if you look at the at the fate of German or European car industry. France, for instance, they have gone to Czech Republic, they have gone to Slovak Republic, and now they are confronted with demands for higher wages too, and more coordination and so far. I think you can't blame the German unions or the German system of co-determination. It is, of course, an instrument the German workers can use against the ownerships, but on the other side, even in a real crisis, they have no the power to decide what will happen with those plants or enterprises.
Okay, Dr. Kero Neugebauer, thank you very much. 20 years German unification later on. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And one sentence after. If you look for differences between East and West, you find the unions in the East don't dare to call for a strike because most of the, even members of the union say, please keep calm. We are interested in our job. We don't want that they cut jobs to pay a little more money. And so far, let us be paid less than our West German colleagues, but please keep our jobs. And this kind of a peaceful settlement of conflicts is still possible because there is a division between East and West in Germany. But the relevance of the conflict which that produced the left as a strong party, that's a problem this party will have. And as long as this party cannot decide to become an anti-capitalistic party for all Germany, they will have problems to survive in a longer sense.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Mr. Poop.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.